Welcome to Navigating Marine Risks, a podcast series produced in partnership with AIG. Featuring panel discussions with leading marine industry experts, our series host is Dr. Stavros Karamparidis, head of the Maritime Transport Research Group at the University of Plymouth, UK. Joining Stavros to discuss the impact of cyber attacks to the maritime transport sector are Athanasios Drougas, cybersecurity expert at the European Union Agency for Cybersecurity, ENISA; Svante Westphal, director of the Institute for Security and Safety at the Mannheim University of Applied Sciences; Kronis Kapalidis, project officer for maritime security at the European Maritime Safety Agency, EMSA.
Welcome to Navigating Marine Risks, a series of podcasts produced in partnership with AIG. I'm your host, Dr. Stavros Karamparidis. The impact of the global pandemic, the ongoing war in Ukraine, and the attacks on shipping in the Red Sea have all combined to slow global growth and rewire global trade. Terms such as nearshoring and friendshoring reflect the way in which global supply chains are being rerouted to meet national security concerns and enhance resilience. Meanwhile, the patterns of global and regional trade are being further complicated by the spread of protectionist industrial policies. Because the maritime transport sector carries 80% of global trade, it is heavily impacted by all these concerning developments. And at the same time, the industry is faced with the twin challenges of decarbonization and digitalization. Navigating Marine Risks looks at all these issues and more. In today's episode, we're going to discuss one of the unwelcome consequences of digitalization in maritime transport, the risk of cyber attacks. In a digital era, how can shipping and port operations be protected against cyber criminals and malign state actors? Joining me to discuss the problem and potential solutions are Thanos, Svan, and Kronis. Thank you for joining me today, and welcome to all. Svan, is cybersecurity a risk for the maritime industry, and what could be the consequences of a cyber incident? Can you please share information about where in the supply chain cargo interests are more exposed to a cyber event?
First of all, thank you very much for inviting me, and it's an honor to be here. So in order to answer your question, we've already seen various cyber attacks in the maritime domain, and various cyber attacks which really, really were heavily impactful on the supply chain as well. So for example, the Maersk incident, that was a cyber attack in 2017, which was a huge incident. It was a cyber attack with a wiper. So that's a malware called NotPetya. And this one caused that all company computers were black all around the world. So including all the ports, including all the vessels, anyone who had computers in Maersk, they didn't work anymore. So the whole company had to go back to work analog for 10 days. And it would have been much worse even if it weren't for one computer somewhere in the middle of nowhere where there was a power outage. So that incident cost millions of dollars to the company, and other companies were impacted by it as well. I mean, it rippled throughout the whole supply chain. There were trucks in the entrances of ports who didn't come in anymore because nobody understood where the shipping had to go. It was a complete chaos. So this is one of the most impactful cyber attacks we've seen on maritime infrastructure. But we've seen so many others in the last years as well. So just last year, DNV's ship manager, they also had a ransomware attack, pretty common one from a ransomware cartel, I believe. And this affected 1,000 vessels worldwide. So that was a management software, like a server somewhere hosted, which then told ships where to go and how to where to load and unload cargo, etc. And if you imagine that something like this is broken, doesn't work anymore for a few days, this can have impacts on the supply chain. So generally, I would say cyber attacks can have many faces. The ransomware ones are the most prominent ones, and everybody talks about them in the media. But what we can also think about in the maritime domain, obviously, we can have attacks on vessels themselves, on the ports and their infrastructure. Also on logistics and transport services and software. So these are kind of the three dimensions in which we have to think if we want to secure our companies, our vessels against cyber attacks. So for vessels, just imagine somebody could manipulate the navigation software or the steering of the vessel, right? You could just take over a vessel and steer it to somewhere you want it to be. This could be on good cases, just goods going somewhere they're not supposed to go and be stolen. But this could also be happening with, I don't know, somebody loading vessels with explosives, etc., and driving them into ports. So this could have severe safety impacts as well. And the other one would be the port infrastructure. Just imagine you could control a digitalized port, especially where a lot of the loading and loading of the cargo is done autonomously. If you can make ships load differently, or if you can manipulate that, or you load too much on ships to sink them in the ports, just imagine what hassle this would be. And then there's all the software behind this. So we link our ships and we link our ports and all the cargo and supply chain. We link ourselves to each other via software. We rely on this software and we hardly ever think about it, how interconnected we are. And targeting this software especially will definitely cause a lot of damage if you know the right ones to tackle. So, yes, there are many scenarios I can think of where targeted attacks on a specific fleet of vessels or ports could massively impact our global supply chain. And all in all, we rely more and more on digitalized systems. That means we make ourselves vulnerable if we not make sure we secure them properly.
I totally agree with that, Svan. And see, taking the next step, I would probably ask Thanos to give us any main challenges that you may think that practitioners are facing with regard to cybersecurity, because Svan just described how those challenges, what kind of impact they could have. Thanos, what do you think?
Thanks a lot, Stavro. First of all, let me also thank you for the invitation to today's discussion. I'm very excited to be part of this panel. So when looking at the challenges that cybersecurity practitioners face, I think we need to look at them from two different angles. First of all, what is the problem that they're trying to solve? And second, what are the difficulties preventing them from solving the problem effectively? So looking at the problem itself, we need to consider how the overall threat landscape for the maritime sector has evolved over the past few years. So if we look at the number of incidents targeting operators in the maritime sector, be it shipping companies, vessels, port operations, or anything across this supply chain, we can see, first of all, an increase in the overall number of incidents, an increase in the impact of these incidents. Now, I'm not arguing that the maritime sector is impacted more than other critical sectors. In fact, I think more or less every critical sector is suffering from the same increase in cybersecurity incidents.
What are the trends in these cybersecurity incidents that we're seeing, if any?
When we look at the specifics of the incidents targeting the maritime sector, we can come up with a few key conclusions. So, first of all, what we're seeing over the past few years is the gradual increase in incidents targeting the operational technology side of maritime operators. So far, we have had multiple cases of unavailability of IT systems and so on. However, when the incidents start to affect the cyber physical interface of maritime operations, then things might become very tricky very quickly. The second thing is we need to take into consideration the broader landscape concerning the threat actors. So that is the entities that are actually targeting operations in the maritime sector. So given the geopolitical context, what we've seen over the past few years is, first of all, an increase in state-sponsored attackers. So these are attackers motivated by, let's say, political reasons that are mainly using attacks affecting the availability of services in the maritime sector, right? So we're talking about denial of service attacks, targeting ports, targeting vessels, and so on. On the other hand, we're also seeing an increase in the more traditional cyber criminals. So these are groups that are motivated by financial interests. And as a result, they tend to use more means that would allow them to extort money out of affected organizations. So things like ransomware, malware, they utilize a lot social engineering attacks, phishing attacks, and so on. So this is more or less the landscape in which the cybersecurity practitioners in maritime are called upon to operate. Now, there are also some internal challenges. Some of them are not unique to the maritime sector. So ask any cybersecurity practitioner in any critical sector, and they will mention lack of resources, lack of manpower, lack of skills, issues with managing cybersecurity in the supply chain. So these are more or less challenges common to all critical sectors. However, specifically to maritime, we see also some more specific elements that should be factored in. So for instance, information security experts in the maritime sector are called upon to deal with a more complex environment. So we're talking about, first of all, operational complexity, a lot of interdependencies, a lot of stakeholders, a lot of organizations involved in the operations. Just think of a common port. So you have the port authority that is responsible for cybersecurity, among other things, in the port ecosystem, and they need to implement cybersecurity policies across a very large list of entities operating within the port ecosystem. So the operational complexity is one factor that actually makes life difficult for cybersecurity practitioners. On the other hand, you have the technical complexity. So port operations, vessel operations, so all the different entities operating within the maritime ecosystem typically deal both with IT, information technology assets, as well as operational technology assets. And this adds an additional layer of complexity because in many cases, the security of these different assets of IT and OT are not necessarily managed by the same functional unit within the organization. So they may comply with different standards, with different practices, have different auditing processes. And we also need to factor in that the OT side also tends to include more legacy systems with very long patching cycles. So if there is a vulnerability, it may take far longer to resolve it in an OT operational context as opposed to an IT operational context. So all these put together create, I would say, a set of challenges that are actually quite difficult for cybersecurity practitioners to overcome.
Thank you very much, Thano. That was a very comprehensive response, I have to say. But going to Chronis, do you have any bright examples regarding effective management of cyber risks? Because we had a lot of challenges and issues. I'm sure there should be something in terms of management, right?
Well, this is a very interesting discussion, and it's one we come across very often, because whenever cyber risk management within an organization is actually effective, we do not hear about it because there are no incidents to that organization. So trying to prove that you're doing a great job without having any incidents is quite challenging. But I can say with you, as we at EMSA, the European Maritime Safety Agency, we engage with port facilities, but also shipping companies around Europe, that the situation is improving. These entities are starting to understand the risk, and they are taking measures to address it. Obviously, it has to be done in proportionality with the personal environment of the specific entity. It has to be done by taking into consideration the elements that Thanos just described in terms of resources, in terms of IT infrastructure. But to give a positive note, we are seeing that improvement and that raise of maturity within the sector.
Thano, I would like to go back to you because Chronis mentioned a lot about the maritime sector, but since you're having a more holistic view, how mature do you think the industry is when it comes to cybersecurity?
First of all, I would like to echo what Chronis mentioned, that there have been substantial steps towards improving the cybersecurity maturity in maritime. So I recall that several years ago, when we would go to like industry conferences or meetings, we would have to, let's say, advocate for the need for cybersecurity as if it was something that was, let's say, out of scope for the management of these entities. However, clearly things have improved. Now, we at ENISA conduct an annual stock taking of cybersecurity investments and cybersecurity maturity across all critical sectors. So this gives us a data set to compare how the different sectors fare compared to one another. Based on the data that we collect and the different data points, I can say that the maritime sector is more or less middle of the pack, maybe a bit below, judging by a combination of metrics that we collect. Now, there is no catch-all metric that we can point to and say this is the actual maturity score of a sector. However, looking at things like, for instance, incident detection and response capabilities, budget allocated to cybersecurity, to training of staff, and so on, I would say that the maritime sector more or less is, let's say, middle or a bit below the middle of when looking at the cross-sector average.
How is this cybersecurity view of the maritime sector supported by the available data?
This is also evident from more specific metrics like the time that it takes to patch critical vulnerabilities. So we see that in the maritime sector, it takes around 1 to 6 months for 34% of the organizations to fix critical vulnerabilities, either in IT or OT. And 35% of organizations state that it takes at least 1 month to fix critical vulnerabilities. Now, clearly, this is influenced by the existence of OT in the vulnerability management process of these organizations, but still, this is something that indicates that there is still room for improvement. We also noticed that the maritime sector has among the highest scores when it comes to the influence of legislation. So we see that actually compliance with the NIS directive, for instance, in the EU, is the primary driver for 75% of operators in maritime to invest in cybersecurity. So first of all, this shows that regulations are working in the extent to which they actually influence cybersecurity spending. However, it also shows that the sector is not yet perceiving cybersecurity as an enabler for the digital transformation or as a competitive advantage, but rather as something that they need to do out of compliance. So I would summarize this as in all critical sectors, the maritime sector is gradually improving, but there's still work to be done.
And talking about work needs to be done, Chrony, do you think there is a difference between the maturity in the port sector or in the ships?
Thank you, Thanos. Yes, well, the first thing we have to think about is that no two organizations are the same. Of course, there's a difference in maturity. And Thanos did touch upon it, and he talked about the driven by regulatory compliance approach, which, generally speaking, if we look at that, ports are indeed more mature than shipping companies. But that's not the only way forward. Of course, it is unfair to talk about the maturity of shipping companies on the other side as a whole, because large companies have the resources to address cyber risk, and as such, their maturity is higher. For smaller shipping companies, and we have several of them in the EU specifically, it is much more difficult to do that. So if we try to look at an overall answer to your question, I would say that indeed, the port sector is a bit more advanced, is a bit more mature, mainly because of the need for regulatory compliance. And now with an NIS2 directive that's coming into place, that's going to be even more challenging for them. But the shipping companies are following because they start to see the value of addressing cyber risk for their daily business.
If we can talk about autonomous vessels now, Swan, how protected are autonomous vessels from a cyber event? And what is the role of AI in traditional, put in quotations, and autonomous vessels?
Well, first of all, going back a step back to the last two questions, something I wanted to add was really maritime is so exciting and interesting for cybersecurity professionals because it has all these complications, right? So it has all the complications of fleets and vessels, which are fairly old, but still operating, and they will still operate for another 10, 20 years. This is unlike other sectors where you have some kind of technology which is only there for 2-3 years and then it gets updated and you have new technology. So what we need to do and what makes it so complicated is that we have to develop new technology in a way that it's secure, but also we have to integrate old technology. So the difference between old and new and doing something in the after something is already fixed and done is always much more expensive and tricky than doing it from the very beginning. So this brings us to the AI topic, right? We are now at the stage where we develop a lot of AI applications, AI driven technology which has some kind of form of machine learning in there. And then it really depends on which AI you are using, whether it's supposed to be self-learning AI or just machine learning in the more common sense, which is based on statistics. And I can always say, whatever we do now and wherever we want to target it, we need a proper risk analysis before we start developing it and understanding what exactly are our aims with this, where should it go? And then we have to have cybersecurity by design. So when we start designing AI and also autonomous vessels, all of this is great. And I think it can take us far and it can solve many, many problems we have at the moment. But we need security by design. We need to start very, very early in thinking about it. And of course, AI plays a different role because especially if you use self-learning AI, which means that while it is already in place and already running, it's still learning by all the tasks it's doing. We have to take care that we don't get manipulated then by some kind of sensors or sensor manipulation, which will then trigger the AI to learn in the wrong way. So this is a new challenge, especially compared to cybersecurity before, because before that we knew, okay, this is the algorithm and this is how it should work. This should be the outcome, and we could clearly see when it does something it wasn't supposed to do. If we have AI, it gets much more like the self-learning AI. This is a gradual change of output. And it's really, really tricky to understand where manipulation has taken place. And once the ship crashes onto a rock, that's when we are too late. So this is really something we have to be aware in starting developing AI-driven autonomous vehicles or vessels.
Crony, I see you want to add something on that question, please.
Yes, first of all, I completely agree with what Sean just described. And I would like to look at it from our perspective, from EMSA's perspective. And I think we all agree that technology is taking shipping to uncharted territories. And autonomous vessels or mass maritime autonomous surface ships, as we call it, is a great example of that. And I can share with you that currently the initiatives at the IMO level to try to frame the modus operandi of mass, which also includes security. And we have been really active on that at EMSA, where we believe that a layered approach in terms of cybersecurity is a good starting point. So when we look at the operational environment of an autonomous vessel, we look at the core, the periphery, and the edge, as we call it. So trying to protect the core, the main operations of the ship, but then also the periphery, which includes all the data and all the exchange points on the seaside, but also the edge, which is all shore-based operations. Protecting all these is really fundamental in this question. And we need to look at the specifics for the industry to apply what Sean just described before.
You know, as we're discussing about how we can go forward, Sean, I would like to come back to you and I would like to ask, which are the main defenses against a cyber attack? And do you think that crew has an important element to play in cyber defense?
When we talk about cybersecurity, we usually think in three dimensions. So we cybersecurity people always talk about people, processes, and technology. So these are the dimensions we think in to protect organizations, to protect businesses, to protect ourselves against cyber attacks. So what do we mean by this? Let's start, for example, with technical measures, because most people really, if you talk to them and you talk to them, oh, I'm working in cybersecurity, people immediately think that you're one of these guys in the hoodies just playing around with firewalls and network segregation all day. I mean, we do have these guys within our roles, yes, they're there and they're definitely needed. So these technical measures, everyone thinks cybersecurity is, and it's true, we need that. We need firewalls, we need network segregation, access management, backup systems. You know, this is something really we can buy, implement, we can have service providers taking care that it's done. But apart from that, this all needs to be managed. So this is what we mean with processes, right? Somebody has to have an overview of what which technical measures are already in place, which still need to be bought, which still need to be spread across the organization. Also, Thanos and Kronos already mentioned the NIS2 directive. Compliance plays a role, right? Are we compliant with what we do? All this is done by the processes, people, and parts. So these are the management system managing cybersecurity. And they can have various names. They can be called cybersecurity management systems, information security management systems. The most important part is that you need an overview of what's happening and that you have processes for somebody telling you if something's off, then you can have a look at it and you understand that there is a cyber attack and you can react. This is why we need processes. And last but not least, it's the dimension of people. And without the people, the other two can't really work, right? You need the right people understanding and making everything working together. And here the crew plays a specific role, right? Because you can have fantastic technical measures if you have engineers finding their way around it because it's too complicated to use. They literally open the doors to attackers. Or, yeah, quite in a cyber sense, you know, if they fall for a phishing attack and they let them into the network, the attackers can do whatever they want.
So training of crew is key.
So it's really, really important that the people are trained, that they know exactly what they need to do if something happens. And there should never be a blame game if something happens, right? It's really, really important that everyone knows to do. And this is where the crew is absolutely needed. In order to make sure that the whole cybersecurity system is working, they need to make sure that they understand that they are not to share any account details and that they understand when somebody tries to phish them, that there might be criminals being after their accounts or their access to the ship's computers or the shipping company's computers. Also, external devices. I mean, there's many, many tricky attacks. I think we've heard the name social engineering before. What do we mean with social engineering? We mean that the criminals actually make use of our most human interactions. So we want to help people. We want to be proud of what we've done. And social engineering is targeting exactly this. So criminals use these very innate things about pressure, about getting something for free, etc. So they really try to target you and make something which is interesting enough for you to click on. And this is really tricky to train the crew not to fall for this. Because if somebody asks you for help and you train the crew, say no. Right? Say no if somebody asks you for help. Making this small distinction between this is a scam, this is someone really trying to phish you, or this might be a real ask for help, and of course you need to help them, right? So for the crew, it is really, really important that they take security measures seriously and that they understand and ask if they don't understand what needs to be done in terms of cybersecurity.
Talking about how important people are, Chronic, does crew saturation or multitasking lead to more increased exposure to cyber attacks?
I would say that this is an accurate statement. And if I could put it in one sentence, I would say that this is because it's all about the power of repetition. The way we are used to doing things, and seafarers have been doing things in a specific way. They have learned how to rely on specific systems for many, many years and decades. And now all of a sudden they need to think about a new risk. And long and demanding shifts on board are vigilance's worst enemy, if I could put it that way. I would say, because we talk a lot today about three things, I would say that three things are very important. Awareness, guidance, and training. Awareness, to know what the risks are. Guidance, to know what to look for during a shift and know what to do when a crew member spots something suspicious on board. And training to practice all these things and be ready to respond to them whenever needed. So I would say that these things are really key and fundamental in dealing with the issue of crew saturation.
I would like to go to you, Thano, now. Do you think that increased connectivity has also increased the risk of a cyber attack?
Absolutely. I mean, the increased connectivity is really at the heart of the issue here. So essentially, connectivity has been the driver for the entire digital transformation in the maritime sector and other critical sectors as well, because it unlocks a lot of efficiency gains, it unlocks autonomous processes, it allows us to actually get real-time access to data and make real-time decisions from our own laptops. So clearly, this is, I would say, a fundamental element of the entire optimization of operations in maritime. However, at the same time, connectivity is really a way to get from one point to the other, right? So you connect different things, you connect different networks, different computers, different assets. So eventually everything becomes connected. So this creates a path to go from anywhere to anywhere within a particular network. And this is not necessarily a problem on its own. However, it creates some challenges from a cybersecurity perspective. So first of all, you have many more entry points to the network, right? So I'm talking about devices that are accessible from the internet that an attacker can potentially target in order to get access and eventually work their way towards the more valuable assets of a network. A second major problem that is also very relevant for the maritime sector is that through this increased connectivity process, you have a plethora of systems and processes becoming connected when they were not designed to be connected, right? So we have a lot of legacy systems, industrial control systems that were not necessarily designed to operate in this sort of setting. So let me give you a simple example. So let's say that you have a particular facility that hosts industrial control systems and the SCADA system to operate everything. It was very often the case that these industrial control systems and the SCADA system would communicate with each other in a non-secure way, right? So via unencrypted messages, for instance. Now, this in itself is not necessarily a problem if this facility remained isolated. So basically, all you had to do was to make sure that the door is locked, no one got in, and you're good to go. However, once you connect this, let's say, sub-network to a broader network because you want access to the data, because you want to be able to give remote control commands to this industrial control system facility. What happens then? As soon as your outside network is compromised, then all of a sudden you have a path towards the industrial control system part that is by design not secure or not secure enough to operate in an interconnected way. And this is where I think there is a bit of a misconception around cybersecurity. So cybersecurity is not a burden or a cost center for organizations. It is actually the instrument that will allow these organizations to invest in this interconnectivity and the optimization that comes with it. Because cybersecurity is what will allow you to actually move towards this interconnected setup with, let's say, reduce risks concerning both the likelihood of a cyber attack, but also the potential impact of such an incident.
Thank you, Thano. And quickly, Svan, what actions do you think that we should take forward in order to increase the training of the crew against cyber attacks?
Yeah, I think Kronos already mentioned, like, it's awareness, guidance, and training. I quite like the threefold steps here. With respect to the content for the awareness, I would say it's most imperative that we stop acting like there's that one guy in a hoodie, but we're actually dealing with well-organized criminals. These are companies of sizes more than 250 people, and people need to understand that, right? They're not dealing against that one specific attacker somewhere in their basement, but it's actually a group of people very well organized, one part only taking care of getting access somewhere, the other group or team of people then leveraging that access and running the actual attack. Then there's the other group, which are the customer care group, getting into contact with you. And then the other last team, which is taking care of the cashing out money part. So these are organizations we're dealing here with, not just individuals, because in the perception of people, in the awareness perception, One guy somewhere, well, I can deal with that, right? I won't be fooled by one guy. But if you know that this is actually organized crime we are dealing with, this is a completely different play. So on the guidance and awareness part, I'd say we definitely have to teach them about cyber hygiene, about account security, secure passwords, multi-factor authentication, you name it. And on guidance, I would say we always need to answer all the questions, like the why should we do this? How can we do it? Who should do what exactly, right? And what it is exactly. And in order to get this done, we need transfer tasks. So many, many awareness campaigns I've seen stop at the level of just telling them why they should do it. The world is evil. Yes, it is. And thinking, okay, now you should use secure passwords. But nobody tells them actually what a secure password looks like and how to install multi-factor authentication. I mean, not everyone is really, really tech savvy. So some people really need that transfer of bringing it into the real world and doing it once and over again. And this is probably also what Cronus meant with training. You need to practice it, and you need to practice this every day until it becomes more like a security culture. If everybody does that, then it becomes a culture and everybody orients themselves in what everybody else is doing. So this is where we want to go from. A colleague of mine once said, cybersecurity culture is what people do when the bosses are not looking, right? We really want everybody to do it from their hearts because they know it's the right thing to do and they never would question behaving otherwise. So this is like the prevention part. What comes then is the incident response.
And can you share an example of an incident response?
So imagine you have a cyber attack. How do you deal with it? It's obviously quite embarrassing that you might have clicked on a link. It's embarrassing that you might have let them in somehow. But it's really, really important that people speak up then, because most of the times, if it's in very early stage, you can somehow prevent further damage and contain it. It's really important that people know how to escalate then, who to talk to. Who do I notify if something happens? And this needs to be trained through the whole process of we're under attack, going through it needs to be exercised in simulation or tabletop trainings. I mean, there are fantastic exercises you can run through. They also raise the awareness and giving everybody their place in incident response and also making sure that everybody understands it's not a question if, but when you get hacked and how you react to it. And now we come back to crew saturation. Of course, and we have that situation in cybersecurity in general, the mental health situation of cybersecurity professionals isn't great. There are studies which showcase that cybersecurity professionals suffer from burnout quite a lot, more than other professionals, which means we're already under stress in everyday work. Especially the crews, they work in shifts. It's already a stressful environment. Now, just imagine you have a stressful environment and you're under stress anyways, and now comes a cyber attack. This adds another layer of stress, and an incident such as that can also cause severe consequences to individuals, such as PTSD and burnout, etc. So we make sure with training that people have experienced the situation before, so it's not new and it's not stressful for them because they know it can be solved. It's a stressful situation, but they know we've been through stressful situations and we can solve this. So this is really, really important, and it's a shout out to everyone to make sure that you have more on your path towards a security culture rather than just awareness.
Talking about, as you mentioned earlier on, that we're living in a world that we have to deal with organized gangs and, you know, people that have bad incentives and all that kind of stuff. Thano, do you think that we have efficient regulation or guidance to tackle cyber risks? And what is the role of the industry with regards to this?
So I think that's a very good question, because we already alluded to the impact of compliance requirements with overall cybersecurity spending in organizations. I think that from an EU perspective, we can see that the policy and regulatory framework has reached more or less a state of critical mass. So I believe that we have enough. To give you a few examples, We've had the NIS directive for several years now. Its influence on the increase of maturity of maritime operators has been well documented by NISA as well. And now we're moving towards NIS2. And a couple of the main differences that NIS2 brings for the maritime sector specifically is, first of all, a significant increase in the operators that will now need to comply with these cybersecurity rules. So whereas under the NIS directive, we had in many cases a handful of maritime operators actually having to comply at a national level with the law. Now with NIS2, the scope increases substantially, so we end up in the several hundreds of operators per EU member state.
What other impacts on cybersecurity will the introduction of NIS2 have?
We also have an additional novelty in NIS2, and that is the management accountability. So we've seen that management involvement in cybersecurity, for instance, by being accountable for the cybersecurity programs of the organization, plays a crucial role in the buying of the organizations concerning cybersecurity. And now with NIS2, this becomes mandatory. So this is another thing that we expect will actually result in increased cybersecurity spending and in general in more attention paid to cybersecurity. In parallel, we've had some other recent EU regulatory developments, like, for example, the recently adopted Cyber Resilience Act. Now, the Cyber Resilience Act concerns cybersecurity requirements for digital products, so hardware and software that is also often used by maritime operators. So this creates an additional layer of assurance concerning the cybersecurity posture of the products that you buy and use, right? So I think that from a regulatory standpoint, we already have, let's say, enough for operators to deal with cybersecurity and effectively address cyber risk. In parallel, we have guidance from national authorities, from the industry, from NISA as well, that provide an additional support to organizations that need to comply with all these new regulations. However, the point I would like to make is that for me, regulation serves as a means of introducing a baseline. So it is not the objective of regulation to serve as a sort of compliance checkbox that, okay, these are the requirements that we need to meet. We meet them, fine, let's move on. I think the whole point of having a regulation around cybersecurity is to make sure that everyone complies with a minimum. And then it is up to the organizations themselves, to the industry itself, to go beyond what is set in the regulation and actually understand the benefits of improving their cybersecurity maturity for their own business, aside from any compliance obligations.
Crony, currently the IMO is looking to revise its cybersecurity guidelines. What would you like to see moving forward?
Yes, well, I have to say that indeed, and I'm happy to say that EMSA has been supporting this specific work at the IMO level with the revision of the cyber guidelines. We have been working on revising the 2017 cyber risk management guidelines, and allow me to say, the more comprehensive document we have prepared has been well received, and we hope that it will be finalized by 2025. But moving forward, it's hard to say, because it's a combination of the different regulations that Thanos described, which again should be perceived, and I fully echo what he said, as the minimum requirements that any organization should have in place. Because on the one hand is the regulatory-driven approach, the tick-the-box approach, but on the other hand is the competitive advantage. Organizations should on their own do things about cybersecurity in order to have a competitive advantage in a very competitive industry like the maritime industry. Maybe it is time to have more mandatory regulations for ships, which is something that is missing. But again, this is something that we will explore further, both at the IMO level, but also at the European Union level. And stay tuned for more things to come on this.
Thank you for that, Crony. And allow me to follow up with a second question. Do you think that governments rely too much on international regulatory bodies for maritime cyber regulation?
Well, yes. I think that we, as the European Commission, as an agency of the Commission at the EU level, we have a role to play in this, of course. EMSA has supported the Commission in several initiatives on the topic, with the most important ones being the two guidance documents that we have published on how to address cybersecurity during SIP and port facility inspection activities from the member states. In these documents, what we try to do is to provide very clear guidance on what to look for in terms of cybersecurity during the inspections from the national maritime administrations. Obviously, and it's something which I think we all agree, we do not expect the inspectors to become cyber experts, but we want to give them the tools in order to know what is important to evidence during their activities in terms of cybersecurity. In essence, it's just another risk that we have to deal with within the risk assessment methodology that we follow. And our role is to provide to governments the tool, the guidance, the support they need in order to make this happen.
Thano, if I can come with a follow-up question, what are the best practices that you can suggest for maritime stakeholders to adopt?
So indeed, and actually I would like to start off by following up on what Chronis said. So indeed, there is no need to just stay within your own borders when it comes to defining cybersecurity good practices and guidance and things like this. So usually in all pieces of EU legislation that cover cybersecurity, there is some form of collaboration platform for member states to agree on the best way to implement the new rules in a harmonized way. There is no point in having 27 different approaches to security measures or incident reporting or what training should look like for the staff or anything like this. It's best to try to achieve at least the highest possible level of harmonization. In this direction, there are several available good practices for the maritime industry to consult. For example, ENISA has already published two documents, two reports on managing cyber risks. These have been adapted to the ISPS methodology for general security risk management, because we believe that it's something that the industry is more familiar with. But in general, I go back to something that Svan said a bit earlier, it's not a matter of the availability of guidance or standards or good practices. A maritime organization can even refer to horizontal standards like ISO or NIST. So there are many, many different frameworks that an organization can actually refer to in order to build up their own cybersecurity programs. And ENISA guidelines notwithstanding. However, where we see perhaps a bit of a gap, and this is something that we try to bridge with the reports that we published as ENISA, is that there is a bit of a challenge in translating the requirements of standards and frameworks into actions. So who does what, when, and why? And how can we prove that something is done? So I think this is the piece of guidance that may be a bit less developed compared to everything else. So I think focusing on practical, actionable guidance for maritime operators to put in practice all these security measures that are available in all sorts of different standards, I think this is, let's say, a bit of a missing piece of the puzzle.
Thank you very much, Thano, for that response. And Chrony, do you think that threats to IT and OT systems are equally considered?
Well, I think that unfortunately they're not. And up to an extent, this is normal, because port facilities, CP companies rely a lot to external providers, in most cases, for their OT systems. And I think we already touched upon it briefly. As such, the responsibility for the security of those systems rely mainly on the vendors, the manufacturers of the OT systems. What maritime operators can do is to set specific standards and requirements regarding cybersecurity when they contract those vendors. So again, what Sean said, cybersecurity by design from the very beginning of a project. There are a few initiatives towards this, like the IAX Unified Requirements E26 and E27, which are worth noting, but that imbalance between IT and OT is something that we need to look at in more detail.
As one, there are a few initiatives with regards to information sharing. How important is information sharing for the maritime cybersecurity sector?
Well, I can only speak for the European Energy ISAC, as I'm involved in this one. ISAC is an information sharing and analysis center. It is important to understand that whatever information sharing and cybersecurity is targeted, we need to establish trust first. So whatever group you think about talking to about information sharing, you really need to trust each other, because obviously you don't want to discuss vulnerabilities with potential attackers. So having that circle of trust enables you to have a great sharing of best practices. So coming back to your best practices, like which standards are you following? Which roles do you have in your organization to cover which part of problems? And how do you measure success? This is some information which is really valuable within one sector, because you have sector-specific problems and you really want to cover these sector-specific problems together. And you're much stronger in a group of people. So information sharing can help in the prevention of cyber attacks. But what it's really about is, if cyber attacks happen, what can you do in order to warn others in time so it doesn't happen to them, at least not in the very same way it has happened to yours? And this is also why it's important to have a sector-specific information sharing, because you use the same technology. As was already said, the IT and OT used in many ports and many vessels is pretty much the same. So if you find a vulnerability and somebody exploiting that vulnerability and you warn the others, they can close it in time so it doesn't happen to them. And this is where information sharing is really, really powerful. We've seen fantastic examples. There's a fantastic publication by the Danish CERT, who were able to protect many members because they could warn each other in time that there was a vulnerability in their firewall. So the operational technology, so the energy, was protected for Denmark. And this is a great example of information sharing, where a trustful community with the same set of problems, the same set of challenges, put their heads together, developing solutions, and by sharing information in time could really prevent a massive cyber attack.
Kronit, do you want to add something about information sharing?
Yes, I would like actually to talk about the perspective within the maritime sector. And there are several initiatives similarly to the energy sector out there for maritime. There is the European Maritime ISAC, but there are also several private sector initiatives. But this is a topic which is of great interest to European Union member states, but also to EMSA. And we have been focusing a lot of our activities on this very topic. Actually, in autumn, we will be hosting a conference on information sharing and incident alerting. And information sharing plays a really key role in several areas, in awareness raising, in capacity building, but also, which is something fundamental, in creating a community of stakeholders, increasing the capability of the sector to address cyber risk. And I know this is something really fundamental from our side as well.
And Thano, I know you mentioned earlier on that you're monitoring the investment that the maritime sector is doing, but considering the current operational environment, do you think that the maritime sector has the funds to accommodate cyber guidelines?
Well, first of all, investments in cybersecurity has to come as part of a broader cyber risk assessment, right? So it's you evaluate the risk, the potential impact, and you see if it's worth the spending. And now, based on this study that we do on an annual basis, we see that the maritime sector is already investing money in cybersecurity. It's not as if no money is being spent on this. The main metric that we monitor is the ratio between the cybersecurity budgets and the IT budgets, because this is organization size agnostic. So essentially, this is a ratio that more or less shows to what extent cybersecurity is prioritized. It should be taken in context and cooperation with other metrics that we monitor as well. However, let's say monitoring this metric on a macro level at least gives us an indication to what extent cybersecurity is prioritized and if cybersecurity spending increases on a year-by-year basis. If we look at this metric, this cybersecurity to IT spending ratio, we see that the maritime sector spends around 5% of their IT budget in cybersecurity. This is quite low. So the cross-sector average at an EU level is slightly over 7%. And if we look only at transport operators, it's close to 6%. So I think the maritime sector scores a bit low. However, where we see, let's say, more resource investments in cybersecurity in maritime is in terms of IT staff assigned to cybersecurity roles, where approximately 10% of existing IT staff have some sort of cybersecurity responsibility. However, at the same time, what we notice is that there is, while cybersecurity spending tends to increase around 10 to 12% every year. We see a 25% year-on-year growth of the direct costs associated with cybersecurity incidents. So essentially, the costs of major cybersecurity incidents increases at the double rate in which cybersecurity investments increase. So I would flip the question and actually ask you not whether or not maritime operators have the funds to invest in cybersecurity, but if they can afford not to.
And I think that's a very good question to leave us as we're approaching the end of the podcast. And it's something that I think that a lot of our listeners, they have to consider in our way forward in the strategic planning into how they operate in the maritime sector. With that note, it has been a great pleasure to discuss such a hot and urgent topic as the challenges and opportunities are related to cybersecurity at sea with you, Thano, Svan and Kroni. And many thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks to you for listening to Navigating Marine Risks, produced in partnership with AIG. I hope that we've provided some valuable insights into a crucial issue for shipping, a sector that is responsible for the transportation of 80% of anything that we consume daily. I'll be back with the next in the series soon. But for now, from me, Stavros Karaberidis, goodbye.
The views and opinions expressed in this podcast series are those of the speakers and do not reflect the views, policy, or position of American International Group Incorporated or its subsidiaries or affiliates, AIG. Any content provided by the speakers in this podcast series is their opinion and is not intended to malign any religion, ethnic group, club, organization, company, individual, or group of individuals, or anyone or anything. AIG makes no warranty or representations as to the accuracy, completeness, correctness, or validity of any information provided during this podcast series, and AIG will not be liable for any errors, inaccuracies, or omissions in the information provided during this podcast series, or any damages, losses, liabilities, injuries resulting from or arising from the podcast, including your use of the podcast.